Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll examine a number of stories and issues in the news.
We'll begin with the G8 summit at Camp David and the announcement that the focus in Europe is now shifting away from austerity to growth. Thomas Ferguson joins us. He is a member of the advisory board of George Soros' Institute for New Economic Thinking, and we will discuss Angela Merkel's apparent conversion in the face of a looming Greek default and the insolvency of Spain's banks. Then the policy director of the New America Foundation's Economic Growth Program, Michael Lynn, joins us. He is the author of a new book, Land of Promise, An Economic History of the United States. We will discuss the economic future of a country that became an industrial, financial, and military colossus that is now struggling to emerge from the Great Recession and could either become more of a plutocracy or rediscover its democracy. Then finally, we will look into efforts underway to save the whistleblower. Tom Devine, the author of The Whistleblower Survival Guide, a handbook for committing the truth, and the legal director of the Government Accountability Project, joins us. And Marcel Reed, the former president of ACORN in Washington, D.C., and one of the organizers of a conference that starts on Monday in the United States Senate Judiciary Committee hearing room, Whistleblower Conference on Civil and Human Rights, also joins us.
Joining us now is Thomas Ferguson, who's a professor of political science at the University of Massachusetts, Boston. He is a member of the advisory board of George Soros' Institute for New Economic Thinking and a contributing editor for The Nation. He is the author of Golden Rule, The Investment Theory of Part Competition and the Logic of Money-Driven Political Systems. Welcome to Background Briefing, Thomas Ferguson.
Hi there.
And the G8 summit at Camp David concluded with an apparent conversion of Angela Merkel away from austerity towards growth. Clearly, behind the scenes, President Obama was basically pleading with her, since she appears to hold his political fate in her hands. Do you think that the deal, whatever it was that was made at Camp David, can last long enough until after the elections, or do you think Do you think the euro is going to unravel before then?
Okay, well, you got to decide which question you want to ask me. My take is there's probably no deal. I think there's probably not much more than a general understanding. And the U.S. doesn't have a sort of fundamental role in that, except to backstop it like that in the event we're needed. I mean, I think this is fundamentally a Eurozone story, and the basic bargaining is almost certainly between France and Germany. My take there is that both France and the Germans now have some incentive to do something. In that sense, I think they will move, but I don't think Obama had much to do with it. I think it's been clear for a couple of weeks that as the cost discussion about leaving the euro has gone up in Germany, they started with very low estimates, and now you get everybody shaking their hands and sort of saying, God, this could be a trillion euros and things like that. So Merkel got killed in the Nordrhein-Westfalen elections. And Hollande is running, a parliamentary election next month. So I don't think either one of them have very much reason to sort of want to keep the sort of European economy collapsing. In that sense, I think they probably will do much. I think they'll probably do relatively not enough. It has the look of any number of other European Union agreements to fix things up, which they talk, they do a little bit, and then 3 months later they're right back in the same situation. In this case, they can't be right back in the same situation because the Greek story, they really will have to move if they're lucky next month, if they're unlucky quickly, because after all, they have the equivalent of a bank run in Greece rolling right now. And the only way that cash is leaving the country without the place collapsing is effectively Greece is going more and more in debt to the European Central Bank, which is advancing them funds to sort of keep going. If that stops, then the game would be over. It hasn't stopped, and every day it goes on, the costs of stopping it rise. It's a really interesting conundrum.
Well, Well, that's been going on for 2 years, Thomas Ferguson. But
nothing like that. No.
Right, not as bad as it is now.
I agree with that. The bank run situation in Greece now is catastrophic.
Sure.
There's been a slow outflow of funds, but this is really a bad scene.
Well, it's also the Spanish banks are, for all intents and purposes, insolvent. And what could collapse the euro surely would be if these countries that feel that their euros are going to lose value start cashing them out. Then you have a run, don't you, if the Greeks start doing that?
Well, they're doing that. And now we'll see. As far as I can tell, you don't have a general run on the Spanish thing. You got reports of runs, some denials, and for sure, you can be sure that people will be moving money out. But it doesn't look catastrophic yet. If the Greeks, as long as they're sort of approaching, I believe the phrase is a point of inflection, they're clearly approaching a danger zone in Europe. But yeah, it could collapse. But on the other hand, what's happened so far is as people make their runs, the European Central Bank advances the money. When they won't refinance an individual bank, as they wouldn't do that in the case of four Greek banks this week, they give the money to the Greek Central Bank, which then advances the money to those four banks. I mean, thus far, the European Central Bank has been financing this, and as long as they do it, they can't blow the whole system apart. I mean, this basically boils down to how much bad debt does the European Central Bank want, potentially bad debt, does the European Central Bank want to pile up? And until the Germans say no on that, this game won't end. And thus far, despite a lot of talk, they haven't said no. I don't think they will do this earlier than the Greek election, which I in mid-June, and I kind of doubt they will do it then. I'm inclined to think opinion is shifting in Germany, but it could be an accident. Merkel obviously ruffled a lot of feathers in Greece just a couple of days ago when she may or may not have called up and suggested they turn their vote in next month into a definite referendum. The Greeks say she did, the Germans deny it. I rather doubt the Greeks made the story up.
Again, I'm speaking with Thomas Ferguson, who's a professor of political science at the University of Massachusetts, Boston, and a member of the advisory board of George Soros' Institute for New Economic Thinking and a contributing editor for The Nation. He's the author of Golden Rule, The Investment Theory of Part Competition and the Logic of Money-Driven Political Systems. So just to summarize then, the G8 conference went at great pains to say they still want Greek in the Eurozone, but there is an election coming up, and if the new party, Syriza, under Tsipras wins, not that that's in the cards, although he's done better than anybody else, he's basically laid down a marker that he's not going to play by the rules anymore. So
they have, doesn't matter who wins, they have to renegotiate that deal. It's unbearable for the Greeks. But I think the only thing at issue here is whether the Greeks will give lip service to not changing the terms while the EU, in fact, then changes the terms. We're not there yet, but that's, I think, the sort of livable deal that may result out of this. But, it can certainly go wrong. It's not, if the Germans were too stiff-necked, then the whole thing could blow apart. But what I see when I look at the European Central Bank is they are continuing to finance these bank runs. And that tells me a lot.
So let's
making the decision now. In other words,
sure,
they have to wait till the June 17th. I think it's the 17th election.
So let's turn Thomas Ferguson to the situation in the United States, which of course is deeply tied, at least in terms of Obama, is deeply tied to the euro crisis. But we had our own little mini crisis, if you will, last week at J.P. Morgan Chase, where a repeat of a movie we've seen several times, a London branch was off the reservation and lost. And now it looks like they lost $5 billion. A French trader called the London Whale managed to lose $5 billion. And Jamie Dimon, of course, is now agreed to appear before the Senate Banking Committee under the chairmanship of Tim Johnson of South Dakota, which I believe is going to take place sometime next month. Tim Johnson is the chair of this committee that's supposed to be grilling Jamie Dimon, is the biggest recipient of JPMorgan Chase's money.
Well, yep, that's what I put out on Aldernet, and that's exactly true. I think the thing everybody needs to sort of focus on here is, first of all, note that the bank claimed to be just doing some hedges. Now, when you actually look at what the bank and other U.S. financial spokesmen say about U.S. exposure to Europe, they say, well, our gross exposure might be bad, but we've got most of this stuff hedged, and so our real net exposure is actually quite small. Now, what we just saw here is that the hedges they thought were, that what they claimed were hedges, were in fact no good at all. And that must inevitably raise questions about, what's the real state of U.S. exposure in the event of a European problem arising? If these hedges are bad, how many others are bad? Because it only takes a few of those hedges to go wrong over in Europe to bring down the whole system when everybody can't cover everybody else. And, that's what the bank regulators and the Congress need to be looking at. Now, it is a problem the nicest thing I can say about the Senate Democrats on the Senate Banking Committee there is that they were pretty bad on the Dodd-Frank revisions. That is to say, if you recall what happened, Senator Dodd had a sort of deathbed conversion. He was exiting Congress, and he actually, his draft of Dodd-Frank was a lot better than Frank's. But it was immediately rejected by his own panel, and Senator Johnson was one of those who were most vociferous in rejecting it. I mean, Johnson's got a really terrible regulatory record. And, he's the nicest thing you can say about him when you examine his record. I did up on the Alternet piece, which everybody can find with no trouble, an unsympathetic thing would say he's a stooge of the finance industry. It's worse that as it happens, by this wonderful coincidence, J.P. Morgan Chase is indeed his largest contributor for a long time. This is a real problem, frankly, the first thing you want to say here is, why are they waiting till next month? The problem is could be a big one in a matter of days. They actually are in the throes of a beginning of a European crisis. And for the U.S. Senate to just sit there and stall, which is what the senator is actually doing, is pretty outrageous. They need to get moving. This thing it has the look of a move to sort of calm everybody down and hope it will go away. But what we just discovered is that the hedges aren't so great. The question of whether U.S. banks are adequately covered in the case of a European collapse hinges crucially on all of the hedges they claim to have done, our offsets, especially the credit default swaps. If anybody can't pay those things in the whole chain can break. This is a real problem.
Well, Tom Ferguson, it's no accident that the senator who's been on J.P. Morgan's payroll for some time is now, of course, ironically conducting the hearing, and he's going to be the watchdog, although he's actually the lapdog. South Dakota, of course, was a state whose usury laws were changed in order to enable the credit card industry to start, in fact, both in South Dakota and Nevada, both states where they overturned usury laws, which essentially go back to the days of the Bible, and they're not just in the Christian religion as well. They're in the Islamic tradition. Isn't that the key to this?
Key is yes. If you mean it's not that they changed the laws, but that the cash is, let's say, comes from New York into the Dakotas. It's a problem.
Right, and it's 15. They can charge. They get the money for 2% from the Fed, and they charge it back to credit card customers at up to 35%. And Chase is the biggest credit card lender in the country.
Well, there's a whole infinity of rip-offs that banks are running on the whole population of the United States. That particular one, I think they get the money closer to zero from the Fed still. I mean, they're not paying 2% for money. Something like somewhere between 25 and 30% of bank profits are coming from credit card fees and things like that. They're still overcharging on all kinds of things, from bounce checks to debit cards and stuff. There is no end to this. And then, of course, you know, we're providing them with a big backup. Yeah, we have a serious problem here. And as far as I can tell, none of the regulators are doing very much about it. The Fed is equally they're supposed to be, and if you listen to the New York bankers, they are claiming that their business is being hurt by excessively tight regulation. Now, where was the Fed on these J.P. Morgan hedges? Just what were they doing? Simon Johnson said the other day in his blog, we need some answers to these questions. They need to call not only J.P. Morgan Chase people, but they need to call Bernanke and the Fed. And they need to sort of ask, what was the state of the bank examiners there in New York? It's a problem. I'm not trying to tell you that everything is wonderful. It's not.
Well, on that note, Tom Ferguson, there's no way that I think anybody that's really watching what's happening can say things are wonderful. The former Chancellor of the United Kingdom, Ken Clark, just said on Sky TV that Europe's banking system is in tatters, and warning that the UK is heavily exposed, and adding that cranky extremists getting elected in Greece could make things worse. And of course, we've
cranky extremists running the main countries of Europe. People
that's
bent
true.
On austerity. Exactly.
They're the real villains in the piece. I thank you for joining us, Tom.
Okay. Have a good one.
You too. Again, I've been speaking with Thomas Ferguson, who's a professor of political science at the University of Massachusetts, Boston. He's a member of the advisory board of George Soros' Institute for New Economic Thinking and a contributing editor to The Nation. He's the author of Golden Rule, The Investment Theory of Part Competition and the Logic of Money-Driven Political Systems. And he has an article at Alternet, Senate Banking Chair Calls Jamie Dimon to Testify, but J.P. Morgan Chase is his biggest contributor. We're going to take a brief station break and be back talking with the author of Land of Promise, An Economic History of the United States.
Banks falling, presidents scratching his head, the economy is down, Wall Street about to lose their mind, up and down, gas prices up and down, nobody knows what to do. You know what we need, though?